Red.
What's wrong?
Red.
The rich will strive to establish their dominion and enslave the rest. They always did. They always will.
Red.
Take 4 red capsules. In 10 minutes, take 2 more.
You take the red pill. You stay in Wonderland. And I show you how deep the rabbit hole goes.
There is a war going on for your mind.
Now I don't know, and it's hard to explain, but it seems like things are just kind of insane, because the world is crying, but nobody's listening, so please leave a message on my cell phone. I see bullets getting better, a biblical weather, and the guy on TV is like a total asshole. Who are you wearing tonight? Celebrity fundraiser tight, black ties making wrongs right, how's your social vanity? I don't know much, I don't know too much, but I know this shit is fucked up.
Economic crashes don't just happen. They are made to happen. Economic booms and busts are controlled by how much money the banksters put in circulation.
You know, the point of this is to remind people that their economic misery has been caused by bankers who have made it easy for banks to make money with almost no risk, because you bear the risk. They don't bear any of the risk. Now, it's funny because the language is changing to try to cover up these facts.
If you have centralized power, they'll use it for their own interests. You don't have to read that in a complicated textbook. It should be, it's understandable by any 10-year-old child, not by educated people, though they have it driven out of their heads by various illusions replacing self-serving illusions.
Business leaders were faced with a dilemma. Overproduction of goods had exceeded demand. Production between 1860 and 1920 had increased by 12 to 14 times, while the population only increased by a factor of 3. There were several ways of solving the problem. One was to reduce working hours and raise wages so that production and consumption reach an equilibrium. This would have led to more leisure time for workers and a higher standard of living. The problem with this solution is that it could have entailed a slight decrease in profits. Corporations are mandated by law to maximize profits on behalf of their shareholders, regardless of social or environmental costs. According to business leaders, there was another problem. John Edgerton, president of the National Association of Manufacturers, warned that a shorter work week would undermine the work ethic and potentially foment radicalism. If people had time to stop and think, they might also take the time to rethink their position in life. The emphasis should be put on work, Edgerton stated. More work and better work, instead of upon leisure. It seems a harmless enough statement, but what businessmen were advocating was revolutionary. Production would no longer be about satisfying human needs. It would be an end, in and of itself. Rather than a democracy of ideas, or a democracy of mass participation, the United States would become a democracy of material goods. The citizen would be replaced by the consumer.
Sometimes we own the zeros, and sometimes we own the ones.
Hey, there's a 10 in my suit.
Sometimes we own your shoes, and sometimes we own your souls.
It's like walking on a cloud of fresh pork.
Sometimes we own your mind, but we're always in your thoughts.
It's a pig that looks like a locomotive and tastes like flowers.
What do we own?
Souls?
Minds?
Pork?
Kind of. We're U.S. Plus. We own the idea of the idea of America.
Consumption is being standardized.
Look at them big brown eyes, belly round mouth full of flies. Let it leak into your 52-inch flat plasma widescreen live. Switch to the tail beneath the robe, the real reality show. Sit back with a sugary snack and watch some scenes from tomorrow night's episode. King Richard and Constantine, both drunk on gasoline. Stumbling round town picking up new recruits from the football team. Hard work, but we're gonna win. White shirts up against brown skins, and the marching band will play nearer my God to thee.
The problem of capitalism is the problem of consumption. And the problem is that after your basic needs have been met, there is no real need for consumption. And so you have to convince people that, in fact, their identities are based upon the consumption of objects for which there is no material need. That's the problem that comes from the expansion of the market. If you look at advertising, it's a very interesting history. In the first period of advertising, yeah, we can say right up until about the 1920s, advertising talked about goods themselves. They talked about how they were made, what they did, how well they lasted, etc. It really is a discourse about objects, about what goods did. However, starting around 1920, that changes. And from that period on, advertising doesn't really talk about goods themselves. They talk about the relationship of goods to our needs.
I recognize the memory that is. It resonates the dark down to watch the water. Stiffen in the concrete in misery. I've been it in my soul, but that is me. Now, listen up, cause you could die. Later on, we'll tell you why. Till then, don't eat, don't sleep, don't breathe, but go about with your normal life. Confused, here's what you do. Two friends, one pink, one blue. Go into town, shop around for low price goods and comfort food. Up next on Cribs and Strollers, wishlist for remote controller. Diamond toothbrush, diamond drawers, gold stereo with platinum knobs. Open your hungry, hungry mouth. MDTV says swallow down. KFC, SUVs, pussy, all in your showcase showdown. I recognize the memory. Resonates the dark bell, watch the water. Stephen in the conquering in misery. I feel it in my soul, but that is me.
Throughout history, the rich have always argued that the poor are the authors of their own poverty. They're poor because they're stupid, they're disreputable, they're hopeless. People are poor because they are paid less than the value that they produce. You need poverty. Poverty is needed if you're going to have wealth. The only way a rich slaveholder, a Roman senator, or antebellum plantation owner in the South, the only way they can live in this fabulously luxurious mode is by having slaves who work from crack of dawn down into the night. That's expropriation. That's creating the poverty of the slave or the serf or the worker so that the slaveholder or the lord, the feudal lord, or the plutocrat, the capitalist, can really accumulate wealth.
Where's Captain America? Where have the friends all gone? Maybe a rerun will add someone that I can look up to. I'll watch the expert advice on how to capitalize and plant your feet in third world need for first world greed and corporate pride. I'll watch the Christian cause shows and learn the Christian law. So Jesus loves Osama, but he doesn't love the things he does. I'll watch the local police on their show frisking fleas. The nightly news brought to you by National Alzheimer's Disease. I always copy down the day's top 10 commandment countdown. Thou shalt not steal in vain was beat out by that killing thing. And I recognize the memory that is. It resonates the dark bell to watch the water. I'm a conquering misery. I feel it in my soul, but that is me. Oh no, the cable's out. Oh God, what'll I do now? I'll have to lift the shades, go outside and walk around. Jesus Christ was a man that traveled through the land, hard-working man and brave. He said to the rich, give your money to the poor. So they laid Jesus Christ in his grave.
You are a true believer. Blessings of the state, blessings of the masses.
Thou art a subject of the divine, created in the image of man. By the masses, for the masses.
Let us be thankful we have an occupation to fill. Work hard. Increase production. Prevent accidents. And be happy.
The American Constitution was formulated primarily by James Madison. He's the major framer of the Constitution. And he wanted to overcome what he called the tyranny of the majority. He said a primary goal of government is to ensure that the opulent are protected from the majority. So therefore he designed the Constitution in such a way that, as he put it, the wealth of the nation will be in charge. The more responsible set of men, those who sympathize with property owners and their rights. And the system was designed that way. Power was in the Senate, which was the least representative body, and it was the wealth of the nation. In fact, it still is. The House of Representatives, which is more democratic, in theory, was given much less power. And the powerful executive is also supposed to represent the wealth of the nation. In Madison's defense, one should say that he was really pre-capitalist in his mentality. He assumed that the wealthy would be what he called benevolent gentlemen who would not be concerned with their own interests, but with the benefit of the people. Adam Smith, who preceded him, was much more realistic. He pointed out that the principal architects of policy, namely the merchants and manufacturers in his day, they ensure that the policies are designed so that their own interests are protected, no matter how grievous the effect on others, including the people of England. It's rather interesting to compare Madison's thinking, which founded this country, with the first major book on politics, namely Aristotle's Politics. Aristotle surveyed many kinds of systems and decided that of all of them, didn't like any of them, but he said of all of them, democracy is probably the best. But he said that democracy has a problem, and it was the same problem that Madison noticed centuries later. He said if in Athens everyone had a right to vote, the poor majority would attack the property of the rich, insist that it be divided, and he also felt that was unfair. But Madison and Aristotle had opposite solutions. Madison's solution was to restrict democracy. Aristotle's solution was to restrict inequality.
Fundamental mechanism that drives the profit system besides self-interest? What is it exactly that maintains that competitive edge at its core? Is it high efficiency and sustainability? No, that isn't part of their design. Nothing produced in our profit-based society is even remotely sustainable or efficient. If it was, there wouldn't be a multi-million dollar a year service industry for automobiles, nor would the average lifespan for most electronics be less than 3 months before they're obsolete. Is it abundance? Absolutely not. Abundance, as based on the laws of supply and demand, is actually a negative thing. If a diamond company finds 10 times the usual amount of diamonds during their mining, it means the supply of diamonds has increased, which means the cost and profit per diamond drops. The fact is, efficiency, sustainability, and abundance are enemies of profit. To put it into a word, it is the mechanism of scarcity that increases profits.
One bank, one army, one center of power. And if we have learned anything from history, it is that power corrupts, and absolute power corrupts absolutely. This is Aaron Russo, a filmmaker and former politician. After maintaining a close friendship with Nicholas Rockefeller, Aaron eventually ended the relationship, appalled by what he had learned about the Rockefellers and their ambitions.
I got a call one day from an attorney woman I knew, and she said, "Would you like to meet one of the Rockefellers?" I said, "Sure, I'd love to." And we became friends, and he began to divulge a lot of things to me. So he said to me one night, he said that there's going to be an event there, and out of that event, you're going to see we're going to go into Afghanistan so we can run pipelines from the Caspian Sea. We're going to go into Iraq to take the oil and establish a base in the Middle East. And we're going to go into Venezuela and try and get rid of Chavez. And the first two they've accomplished, Chavez they didn't accomplish. And I said, you're going to see guys going into caves looking for looking for people that they're never going to find. You know, he was laughing about the fact that you have this war on terror. There's no real enemy. He's talking about how by having this war on terror, you can never win it because it's an eternal war. And so you can always keep taking people's liberties away. And I said, how are you going to convince people that this war is real? He says, but the media. The media can convince everybody it's real. I mean, you know, it's just that you keep talking about things. You keep saying it over and over and over again, and eventually people believe it. You know, you created the Federal Reserve in 1913 through lies. You create 9/11, which is another lie. Through 9/11, you're fighting a war on terror, and now all of a sudden you go into Iraq, which was another lie, and now they're going to do Iran. You know, and it's all one thing leading to another, leading to another, leading to another. Now, I would say to him, what are you doing this for? What's the point of this thing? You have all the money in the world you ever want. You have all the power. I said, you know, you're hurting people. It's not a good thing. And he would say, what do you care about the people for? Take care of yourself and you take care of your family. And then I said to him, what are the ultimate goals here? He said, the ultimate goal is to get everybody in this world chipped with the RFID chip. And have all money be on those chips and everything on those chips. And if anybody wants to protest what we do or violate what we want, we just turn off their chip.
For the first time, essentially the entire world, willing or not, subscribes to the same set of economic rules.
The money system went global, and it began to disorder every local ecosystem and every local social system on the planet.
At the bottom of all the rules is the rule that making money is always more important than anything else.
We've made money more important than human life, more important than the natural world, more important than God or spirit. And on that really bed of lies, our relationship with money is resting.
This is where we are today, is that the entire apparatus of assumptions underlying economics are simply wrong. So, you know, why do we allow societies to be run with this malfunctioning source code?
Part of the difficulty is that very few people think about what money is, where it comes from, how it is created, and how it is controlled.
Well, remember, there has been 150 years of very intense propaganda and indoctrination to try to drive these ideas out of people's heads.
If we could unpack all of this mystification, we probably find that economics was made so complicated in order to mystify people, you know, so they could not really figure it all out.
If everybody knew the full facts about how money is issued, how it's put into circulation, who is issuing it, how they have power and control over the economy and over individuals' lives, I think there'd be a lot of very unhappy people around.
It's often been said that money moves the world, or money is the engine of the world, or money makes the world go round, but in more accuracy, money stops the world from going.
I'm afraid that's more than I care to spend.
Money doesn't facilitate. In its current form, it inhibits transaction and trading.
Money is the one thing that is required for economic exchange. It is the Khyber Pass, if you will. It's the channel through which every transaction must go in order to be completed. We live today by exchanging goods and services with one another, and money is the medium that we use to do that. So money actually becomes the controlling element in economics. Those who control money control everything.
The Fed is a mechanism by which the government is put in debt to control the people, because the Fed really doesn't sit on this side of the world. The real power of it sits on this side of the world. The Fed sits on both. It's really a sort of a fascist organization between big government and the big capital interests. But the power is in the 18 primary dealer cartel banks. Those are the biggest banks in the United States, JPMorgan Chase. That's the main bank. That's the Fed bank. That's the bank with the real power. Goldman Sachs, really powerful bank. Morgan Stanley, Bank of America, Citibank, the big banks in Britain, you know, Barclays or HSBC, the British Empire's foothold in Hong Kong and China. RBC, the foothold in Canada, RBS, foothold in Scotland, Deutsche Bank in Germany, BNP Paribas in France, the big banks in Switzerland, and the big banks in Japan. Japan? What's Japan doing in this cartel? Well, that's the end result of World War II, was conquering Japan, conquering Germany, restructuring Germany such that it was forced into the Anglo-American banking alliance. That's the real result of World War II, and of course it brought in the rest of Europe as well.
The Matrix is a system, Neo. That system is our enemy. When you're inside, you look around, what do you see? Businessmen, teachers, lawyers, carpenters, the very minds of the people we are trying to save. But until we do, these people are still a part of that system, and that makes them our enemy. You have to understand, most of these people are not ready to be unplugged. And many of them are so inert, so hopelessly dependent on the system, that they will fight to protect it. Are you listening to me, Neo?
Is terrible, is no good. When I look to the world with lucidity, I feel very sad because everything is going bad. And it makes me very sad, but it makes me strong because we have to fight. We have to change that. It's our only opportunity. If you feel resignated, you're dead. The only solution is to fight. and to try to change things, because this world is very sick, because money is very powerful. They kill everything with money. So we need to fight against that.